Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
And we are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a developer who understands the marketing strategies needed to grow a business and is an expert at implementing them. He helps course authors, product creators, and self-funded businesses increase their revenue from their existing traffic. As the CEO of DelphiNet, a full-service development and marketing consultancy, my guest has helped companies all around the world improve their revenue conversion strategies. His portfolio includes a large range of companies, including both small startups and Fortune 100s. He's passionate about developing solutions to solve real business problems and employing solutions that are intuitive and easy to use. Now, let's hack Keith Perhack. Have you ever wasted more hours than you'd care to admit trying to set up a website for a new business idea? You've got this burning desire to share your product or service with the world, but all you're doing is playing webmaster and getting nowhere fast, when really what you should be doing is building your business. That's why today I want to tell you about a new service called ThemeValet. It's designed to solve this exact problem. ThemeValet takes away all the hassle of setting up a new website. By setting up a professional WordPress or Rainmaker site on your behalf in less than 48 hours. Just find the WordPress or Rainmaker theme that you want to use, place an order at ThemeValet, and they will set up your theme to look exactly like the beautiful design you were expecting. Plus, ThemeValet can even add your content, logo, and brand colors too. ThemeValet starts at just $99, so don't let your website be an excuse. Head on over to themevalet.com/hack today and finally get the kick-ass website that your next awesome business idea deserves. That's themevalet.com/hack. Welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. Today we have an extra special guest all the way from Japan. Keith, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely my pleasure.
It's great to be.
All right, Keith, let's jump straight into this.
All righty.
Keith.
Yes.
As an entrepreneur, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
That's a good one. That's a great question. I think the number one thing that has really contributed most to that is valuing the connections I have and valuing the people I work with and my clients. And it's really hard for me because I have a very much like out of sight, out of mind personality. Like if people aren't around me, I kind of forget that they're there. But it's been really important to me to make sure that all my clients feel taken care of and that someone is always there answering their questions at any point. And I've noticed as my company went on, whenever I was doing that, my company was doing well. I was making more money. I was getting more clients. I was getting more referrals. I was getting more business. And whenever I got too busy and I stopped caring about taking care of my customers in a really kind of hands-on and personal way, then business started dropping again. So that's been something that's really important to me is not automating that connection with the people I'm working with.
Nice. So basically doing things that don't scale?
It's doing things that don't scale. We do scale it a little. Like, for example, when people email me, it goes into our ticketing system and someone's watching it, right? So it's scaling in a way that we're being responsive,
okay. But
it is something that doesn't scale. You can't scale that to 1,000, 2,000 people, right?
Right.
And that's kind of the purpose of what I want to do with my company, which is a boutique kind of smaller. We're only about 10 people right now. Agency that helps a small number of clients. So we only have a handful of clients, about 20.
Wow.
And that's who we really focus on.
I love that boutique style of business.
Yeah, me too. I used to work with Toyota and Secom and all the big companies. I just hated it. I got out of that.
Nice. And so how you work kind of off out of sight, out of mind, and how you need to sort of be surrounded by people. But it's interesting because you are kind of in the middle of nowhere in Japan.
I am. In fact,
it seems like a strange place for you with that quality.
Well, it's actually, it's one of the reasons I'm thinking about leaving right now.
Okay.
Not sure if we'll actually do it or not, but the two important things for me is one, that I have people to connect with. We're actually all remote, so I don't have anyone here in the office with me.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's just me and my wife. We're actually spread out over Japan, over the US. We had one person in the Philippines for a while and one person in England for a while. But yeah, we're all spread out, but we stay in touch on Slack.
Yeah.
So we're always in our Slack rooms. We have daily meetings where we have a 15-minute meeting just to kind of catch up, see what everyone's doing. So, and that's how I've kind of kept that everyone in sight. And same with the clients. I try to make a Skype meeting once a week or once every 2 weeks with all my clients, touch base, see where we're at, and make sure that I'm still excited about things, make sure they're excited about things, and make sure everyone's kind of on the same page.
Nice. I love how you can still do that. Like, you can keep in so much touch just via...
Technology has just been amazing. Like, when I came here 12 years ago, and in order to call people, I needed a phone card that I would dial into their phone system and then put in my special number, and it was like 20 cents a minute and everything. And now it's like, I call Skype, I can call any US number for free.
Yeah.
It's like,
we're on Skype right now having a conversation.
We're on Skype right now.
Completely for free.
Yep, exactly. It's amazing how much technology has enabled, honestly, people like us, the entrepreneurs, the technical people, to be able to take their business wherever they want. I have one Japanese client at this point. Sorry, two. I have two Japanese clients at this point. Everyone else is in the US or the Europe or around that area.
Nice. I love it. Okay, so let's go back a bit. So there seems to be this time in every entrepreneur's life when they realize one of two things. Either they have this calling to make something bigger than themselves or a difference in the world, or as mostly seems to be the case, they simply find they cannot work for somebody else. Keith, can you tell me what side of the fence you fall on and when you discover this about yourself?
I flip-flop a lot, actually. I haven't worked for anyone for about 5 years now, so I don't know if I could go back to it. But at the same time, I do miss the kind of 9-to-5, I don't have to care about the business kind of thing. Like, I just have to care about my projects, which is always really nice, right? The main reason I went out on my own was mainly I hated my current job because I had just gotten into drudgery. And I was doing everything but sales at the company. So I was doing the product design. So I was deciding what we were making. I was doing the marketing. So I was building all the assets around it. I was actually designing the project and programming the product. Right?
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So I was doing everything. And all they had in the company besides me was really, I had my small dev team, and then I had the sales team, and then the administration. And so I'm kind of pulling this company along, and we got bought out. And I was like, well, if I'm doing this all myself, I don't want to keep doing this for someone else, right? If I'm doing this all myself, why don't I just try to get that last part, which is the sales and administration, and try to do it on my own?
Nice.
So that's kind of what jumped me out, is that, hey, I'm doing everything anyways. This is a great chance. I mean, there's very few times when your company gets bought and you have that clean break, right?
Right.
And yeah, so let's go out and try it. And it's working so far. So I'm 4.5 years in.
So that was it. 4.5 years in, and you only had to try it, I guess you could say, once, and it kind of succeeded and got you where you were.
I've changed what I'm doing a ton. So I started out, I was a freelancer, right? I wasn't running a company. So I started out freelancing, doing conversion rate optimization. My first gig was actually hired as a front-end developer. And I kept that moniker for about 4 years while working with that client, even though I had gone to building his marketing strategy, his back-end, all the technology that he ran his business on. But that was kind of my first go into it, right? So that was the starting place. And that's where I started learning a lot about building a business and the tech and the skill set that people need to be able to succeed in the online marketing community, right? Mm-hmm. And from there, I got really busy. So I brought on someone else. And then I got really busy again. So I brought on another person. Then I got really busy again. So I brought on someone to manage all of it. And it just kind of kept going on. And the way I've been hiring recently is that I keep trying to find the pain points that I hate to do every day. Because you want to be able to focus. If you hate doing something, you're not going to do it, right?
Yeah.
And one of my, you know, we were talking about keeping up with people. I love talking to people. I love jumping on a Skype. Like if I could just, if my job was sitting on Skype talking to my clients all day, I'd be the happiest person in the world, right? But what I hate more than anything is email. Like email is just the bane of my existence. So I have someone, as we were talking about a minute ago, that helps me monitor my email and does that day-to-day touch, right? Just to make sure that people feel supported, especially when I'm asleep, right? Because of the time difference, they're up, they have something urgent. They're like, Keith, what's going on? And then I can have Scott, my account manager, come in and say, hey, Keith's asleep. We're on this. It's fixed. And I wake up and things are done, right? So it's a great, and that's what I've really been hiring for is what parts of the job do I not like? Am I not good at? And I need help on that.
Nice. So at that segue, Keith, tell us something you are absolutely not good at besides email.
Besides email.
Email is such a given. We all are terrible. we really are. It's a nightmare.
Okay, but I will say this. Scott, my account manager, he loves it.
Really?
Like he loves touching base with people and he loves making sure that things are moving. It's like, I can't do it. I can't do it at all. And he loves it. So
I love it too, but I just got to tell you, I took an hour today out of my morning and I'm like, I'm going to catch up on email that's been from last week to the weekend. It's just chaos, right? I'm going to respond to a whole bunch of people. By the time I was like 20% of the way through, those people were already responding back to it. And it was just like, this is making it worse. That's all I'm thinking. I just have to stop. This is crazy. I don't know what to do.
There was someone who was saying that he only checked, I think it was Rob Walling. He only does email in the morning and at night.
Oh, smart.
And that way, you know, you get the first responses done and you check and make sure you have what you're doing for the day. And then at night you can respond to everything. And no one's going to email you back with urgent stuff at like 6 p.m. or 8 p.m., right?
That's smart. That's really smart.
I've been trying to do that as well. But you had asked what's my least favorite thing to do.
Yeah.
Proposal writing actually is one of my least favorite things because proposal writing to me and any sort of kind of administrative sales overhead is to me putting down on paper what we've already discussed and fleshed out and have probably some sort of doc or of a chart or something that explains. So we're taking information that we both agree on and just rewriting it so that someone can sign it, right?
You like making the sale though?
I love making the sale. I don't know if I'm good at it or not, but I just love solving problems, right?
Yeah, which is a great way to think of it. And it seems like you're really good at it. You seem to be doing well for yourself.
It's been working out. I will never say that I'm good at sales because I have no formal training. I have no, like I read a lot of books on it and I practice a lot, but I've never taken a sales course. I would never call myself a salesman, but maybe that's why I'm successful because I don't come at it from a sales perspective. I come as like, I really want to solve your problem.
Yeah. And I was wondering, because as you were talking about that, the connection between the technical side of you and also wanting to know how to market online, it's weird. It seems like the only two people I know like that are you and Patrick McKenzie, both in Japan. And I'm like, what do they put in the water over there?
it's the lack of fluoride. It's the lack of fluoride. It's actually interesting. So Patrick is my best friend here. I've known him for almost 11 years now. And he's the one who kind of convinced me to drop it all and to start out on my own. We lived next door to each other. I was actually his landlord for a year when he was living in my second house. But it is true. There are very few people that really get the marketing technology. There are a lot of people that say they do, right? Mm-hmm. And every time I work with a company that's like, oh yes, we get marketing technology. What that generally means is we have marketing people and we have technology people, right? And so I'll talk to the marketing people and they're like, yes, put this Facebook pixel on all the pages. And I'm like, well, this pixel doesn't have any information like in it. Does it need to be in this denomination? Like, should we put in the values? And they're like, let me check with the team. And I'm like, what do you mean, let me check with the team? This is a very simple question, right? And it's one of the biggest hurdles that we've seen is that you either get a technology person that is interested only in the tech and doesn't care about the business needs, or you get someone who's interested in the marketing but doesn't understand how hard or easy it is to manage something going forward, right? So they'll set up this huge marketing funnel And they're like, okay, now you have 2 days to implement it all. Or they're like, they set it up in some system that works great for one funnels, like ClickFunnels. I love ClickFunnels to death. They set it up, but they set it up in such a way that you'll never be able to use it again, right? There's a very big disconnect between marketing and technology because they are such different mediums. But the modern marketing, this modern internet marketing, you have to understand both, at least to a degree, to be able to be successful in it.
Yeah. And it almost seems like a dangerous combination to have both. That's why it's so interesting. And because the way you say, like, there's tech people who aren't into the marketing side and the marketing people who aren't into the tech side, or don't give it its full value. But sometimes it even goes further than that, where there's actually like it's almost an animosity. The tech side thinks the marketing side is complete crap. And the marketing side is like, these tech guys just are complaining and worrying about having to build these funnels for us.
Yep.
And it's almost like a fight within a company.
It is. I hear a ton of tech people say like, oh my God, I can't believe they wrote an email that made them 250K. Like, I wish I could do that. Or not even I wish I could do that. It's like, I could do that. It's like such a scam. It's like, it's not a scam. It's they've been doing this for 7 years, cultivating this list, right?
Yeah.
They've been doing this for a ton of time, cultivating this, like learning what works. Then at the very pinnacle, they can send an email that makes them 250K, right? It's like saying Apple just makes computers and it's amazing that they can just make a phone that sells all this money, that makes all this money, right? But it's the culmination of everything they've done over their entire history, right?
Exactly. But nobody wants to think of that. Nobody wants to think
Everyone
of
wants the want one.
That success, that $250,000 email is like, well, I could have written that email.
Exactly. It's like the Insta successes that you see. So, you know, it's those overnight successes, right? Like Baremetrics is a great example because everyone's like, oh, yeah, it was an instant success. He built it in 3 days and and made all this money. Yeah, but he also spent like 6 years on other projects that never made it. And like he had gone through so many iterations and this was the culmination of all that, right?
Yes.
Exactly. It's not like you just get to wake up, say, I'm going to do it and then do it first on your first rodeo. Like exactly. It's possible, but not very likely.
Right. And just to be clear for everyone, the Baremetrics, that was Josh Pigford. He was on about 2 weeks ago on the show. So I'll link to that for people so they can find it if they missed that. Because I was wanting Josh on the show as well for months now, and I finally got him and he was awesome. So
yeah, Josh, I met him the first time at Bacon Biz, which is Amy Hoy's convention Philadelphia. And he is a smart cookie. He is really just brilliant.
He is, yeah. But we had that discussion about how it seems like you just came out of nowhere. He's like, yeah, nowhere, like 10 years I've been working online. It's like, exactly, right? And now it seems easy, doesn't it? But to put in, just like it is easy to write that email when you've put in 7 years of building that relationship.
Exactly.
You can almost write any email at that point and do really good in sales because you spent the 7 years.
Exactly. Well, it's like Brennan Dunn. So I think Patrick and I's podcast was the first podcast that he had been on when he released Double Your Freelancing Rate. And he had just this meteoric rise to success, right? But it was built on a lot of background. It was built on a lot of work and a lot of connections and a lot of really understanding the market and having dealt with this for the last 5-10 years, right?
Mm-hmm. It so makes sense that you are on this show today because everybody you're mentioning has been on my show already. They laid the groundwork for you.
It's really, I think that there is I really dabble in this internet. I really work in this internet marketing society, this group, right? And I think that there are very set generations of who is becoming popular in this kind of sphere, right? Yeah. So you had your first generation, which was like the Ryan Dice and Jeff Walker. All that. Then you have kind of your second generation, which is Ramit Sethi, Derek Halpern, Evan Pagan. And now you have kind of this new generation coming up, which is the Brennan Dunn, the Nathan Barry. I'm blanking on some names right now.
The Josh Pigfords, the Josh Patrick Pigford. McKenzie's.
Exactly. And this is kind of the new generation of that internet marketing, of that kind of, I hate the word, I'll call product people, right?
Yeah.
And it's really interesting to see how each of them, each generation grows and then becomes the gold standard. And then a new generation comes out kind of having learned from them. Right.
Yeah. No, it's true. And it is interesting that I've been in it long enough now that I've seen all three of those generations at this point.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. And I just met actually Ryan Dice. I hadn't thought of him in years. I met him about a month ago at a conference and he asked to be on my show and we just booked it for July.
Wow.
I'm excited. It's because it's first. He's the first of the first generation that I'm going to get to have on. So it's really cool. It's really cool. But we should get back to you, Keith, because you are also part of this now third generation of internet marketers, and it's really cool.
People tell me that. I guess it's one of those things like you don't see yourself how other people see you, right? So
exactly.
I totally don't think of myself in that group at all. Like I want to help people. I want to work on it, but I don't see myself as like a forerunner or even in the forefront at all. And I just went to MicroConf Las Vegas with two of my friends and coworkers. And one of them came up to me afterwards, like, Keith, everyone knows you here. And I had never been to MicroConf Vegas before. I'd been to the Europe one, but I'd never been to the Vegas one. But it was true. Everyone knew at least who I was. And that was very strange to me.
Yeah. Was it something that you sort of struggled with at all to deal with? That you were the one people were coming up to you and trying to talk to you now?
Well, I don't see it in that light. I just see, oh, someone's coming to talk to me. That's awesome. Because I just, and you know, my account manager, he was there as well. He's like, okay, what's the sales plan? And like, there's no sales plan. Like, this is the one time a year where I get to be in a community of my peers and people I really want to learn from. I just want to talk to people. I just want to talk to people. I want to see what they're doing. I want to give them ideas. I want to get ideas. I just want to talk to really brilliant, smart people, because that's what this conference is. It's just a conference of brilliant people in my circles and in my industry.
It is. Yeah. MicroConf Vegas is that.
Yeah.
That's very cool. Okay. So let's move to projects if we can.
Sure.
Because I know you guys, or you just started with another partner, Segmetrics.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have a few things going on. So I want to know you, Keith, although you don't see it yourself, maybe that you are at this forefront of this community in a certain way, and people do want to probably work with you or give you ideas of things you could do. I'm sure there's opportunities that pass through your inbox if you ever check it. But I want to know, what's a process you go through right now that something comes across your desk or an idea comes through your head, something like Segmetrics, and you are like, yes, I need to put some resource into this and run with it?
That's actually something. So I've always been a very yes person because I've really liked working on everything. I love to solve any problem that comes across my desk. And it kind of screwed me over a couple of times because I overextended myself, and especially on overextending myself on projects that don't necessarily pay, right? Because when you think of like a SaaS product, the first few months or maybe even the first year of a SaaS product is not going to make you any money depending on your growth rate, right?
Right.
Because it's a lot of hard work. And I've had to stop myself from saying, yes, I'm ready to take on new projects. And so right now, well, when a new project comes across, I really weigh, okay, how interested am I in it? That's the number one thing. If I'm not interested in it, then I'm not going to do it. And I'm not going to do a good job on it, even if I did do it. So it's like, is this something that interests me in a marketing or technical way? Like, would this be fun to market? Would this be fun to build? And also, can I see the value of this? If it's something like one thing that someone had come to me, what was it? It was real estate. It was a site builder for real estate. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, this could make a F ton of money, but I really don't care. I really have just no interest in this whatsoever. I don't know the space. I could build something, but I couldn't be very useful at it, right?
Yeah.
And so I had to pass. It was interesting, but I had to pass. I gave it to another friend. But so I have to make sure that it's something that I really believe in, because also when you start a project, especially a long-term project, so I'm not talking about like consulting clients. I'm talking about like
exactly
big projects totally. That I would want to start. You have to realize, are you going to be interested in this in 2 to 3 years? Because once you start a project, if you have customers, you're going to be doing this for the next 2 to 3 years, right? And if you're successful, you might be doing it for the next 10 or 20 years, right? That was one of the things that, you know, Patrick had said with Bingo Card Creator and Appointment Reminder. And someone, I forget who it was, but someone had said, Patrick, are you really interested in helping nail salons manage their appointments? And he's like, no, not at all. But it's an easy business. And his friend was like, then just don't do it. Really, just don't do it. It's not going to, you're not going to be able to put in the effort because you don't care about it. And that's the number one thing you have to look at when you're looking at, okay, do I want to start a new project? Is how much do you care about it? And one of the things that I've been really lucky about and kind of looking at is, so, you know, we have Summit Evergreen, which is courseware for people who want to build online courses on the internet, right? So it's kind of, Kajabi is our biggest competitor, but it's like Kajabi or Wishlist Member. It's a hosted online courseware. So that's very specifically targeted at online product people. Then we have Segmetrics, which is analytics for Infusionsoft. So Infusionsoft is the number one email host or the email system used for online product people. Okay. So we kind of have this synergy. And then the third project I'm looking at right now is kind of the glue between that Infusionsoft and your, and that Summit Evergreen. So I'm kind of staying within my, that kind of wheelhouse, right?
Ah, smart.
A, you get to keep more interest in it because they all kind of gel together. And you can, you also, your, the developers and the people you're working with, they're all able to jump from one project to another because it's all in the same world, right? And also, I can keep my interest up about that because they're all, it's what I built my entire business around. If I suddenly say, oh yeah, I don't like marketing on the internet, I have more problems than these three products that I've made, right?
That's true. That's smart. So that's a really, and it's interesting too, the evolution sort of, right? The way when you start out, you kind of, like you said, you say yes to everything sort of, you just kind of do, and you don't think long-term years in this, if it's successful, 10 years. And then somebody brings you a great idea that could make, as you say, an F ton of money and you don't care. That's a good place to be.
It is. It is. And I mean, granted, if I had done that and if I was, I guess, more business savvy, I'll put that in quotes, like I would make a ton more money probably, but would I be happy? Right. And that's what I'm optimizing towards, is being happy with my company, being able to work on the things that I want to work on and not having to be beholden to crappy projects or crappy clients.
Nice. Optimizing towards being happy. I like it. Okay, that's going to segue us into this final question I have for you.
All right.
There's this idea I'm bouncing around and now asking everybody about it. I'm calling it the entrepreneurial gap. So as entrepreneurs, we seem to have this issue where we're dreamers, right? And we're always looking, aiming goals, and our view of where we're heading is always straight ahead. And we're set goals 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, a year, 5 years, 10 years down the road. And before we even hit those goals, we set 5 or 10 loftier ones into the future. Everything will be better in 6 months when my business is doing this. In a year when my business is doing this, it'll be better. Everything will be good then. We never seem to get there. It's just always pushing. We want bigger, loftier things. Oftentimes, we fail to stop, turn around, and look at where we've come from. You have, in the last 4.5 years now, built something really, really, really valuable and impressive. So I would love it, Keith, if you could now stop, turn around, look at where you've come, look at what you've learned, what you've accomplished, and tell me how you feel about that.
I think it's just me screaming for about 5 minutes. So you're exactly right. We don't, as entrepreneurs, as business owners, I would even say as people, look back at what we have done. And that's something I notice a lot in the courseware systems that we build, is that when you finish this 6-week course, this 9-week course, you're like, oh yeah, I knew all this. It's so funny. You forget how little you knew at the beginning. And I've been trying to make myself take more time for both of those, both for looking back and for looking and making solid goals, because I do have a problem making goals and sticking to them. The catalyst to that, why I started doing that, the biggest shock was, so I went to MicroConf Europe last year and then the year before that. Unfortunately, I don't get to go this year for travel reasons, but the first MicroConf Europe that I went to was the first conference I had gone to that was not a developer conference in Japan. I knew no one. Patrick took me there. I had talked to Brennan on Skype. I had talked to Nathan Berry on Skype, but I really did not know anyone there. And I was complete fish out of water. I went back last year and I knew everyone. It was like a reunion. I was seeing all my friends. We went out drinking. We actually went out shooting guns in a bunker somewhere in the middle of Prague. But it was, and people were inviting me to things before I had gotten there. It was a completely different experience, right? It was no longer, I'm going to a conference where I don't know anyone, or I'm nervous, or I'm an outsider. It was, I'm going back to see all my friends.
Nice.
And that was in 12 months. And it just completely blew my mind that in 12 months, because I felt I hadn't changed at all. I felt nothing has changed in the last 12 months. But then I go back to this conference and I'm like, I know what all these people are doing for their business. We've been on podcasts. We're in masterminds together. Like, I've obviously grown because look at this community that I'm now a part of. But I didn't even realize it. And that was really the catalyst that made me think, okay, I really have to go back and look at what I've been doing over each 3, 6, 12 months, right? And see how I'm growing, see what I'm improving on. And that's what's going to tell me what I should do next with my company. And that's what's going to tell me what products I should do next or where I should focus things.
That's awesome. That's so great. It's great you made that realization sort of early on. That's amazing.
Well, it only took me 3 years, but instant
right, but you have
success,
a whole lifetime
overnight
ahead of
success,
you.
Right?
Oh, that's awesome. All right, Keith, we've got to talk about your businesses in passing. Can you specifically tell the listener where to go find out more about your businesses and also where they can find more out about you?
So the number one place to find me is keithperheck.com. I realized a couple of months ago that I am the only Keith Perheck on the internet, so you can just search for me and I show up everywhere. Everywhere that shows up is actually me. The two places I'm pointing people to right now for the kind of products I'm doing are, of course, Summit Evergreen, which is online courseware for people who want to build products, build membership sites, that kind of thing. And then Segmetrics, which is, it's better analytics for Infusionsoft. So it lets you track where people are coming from, how much people are paying you, like track where your customer's from and really understand your business if you're using Infusionsoft. If you're not using Infusionsoft, it's not really for you, kind of thing.
Nice. That works. I will link to Summit Evergreen, Segmetrics, and you are on Twitter?
I am. I actually have a really horrible Twitter name. So again, just search for Keith Perheck and you'll find me.
I believe it's Harrison Bond 79.
Harry
Senbon 79? I don't know.
Hadi Senbon. Hadi Senbon. It means 1,000 needles in Japanese. And it's so fun because I've been using that forever. I've been using that for about 12 years now for all my online handles. And everyone thinks I'm someone named Harris Enbone. And people will say, hey, Harris, what's going on? I'm like, I don't know who Harris is, but apparently it's me.
And I went all the way to Harrison for some reason. I don't know. But anyways, I will link to all that in the show notes. So it's very easy for everyone to find, as well as I will link to Patrick McKenzie, Josh Pigford's and Brennan Dunn's episodes. So you can go back and listen to Keith's friends and see how they talk about him.
John, it's been so great. Thank you so much for having me.
It's absolutely my pleasure.
All right. Cheers.
Wow, that was such a fun conversation. And I thank you, Keith, for joining me. And I hope that you out there listening got as much as I did out of that. Keith's one of these people that I didn't know as much as I thought I did about him leading up to this conversation. And I was kind of blown away by him. And I love the Japan connection. I like that too. That's really, really, really cool. So we mentioned a lot of stuff throughout it. It all will be in the show notes for you. But I have this sheet of paper with all of these things that he said. Because Keith just kept one thing into the next. And I was like, man, like, geez, like, where's this guy going to go with all of this? But then when I listened back, there was one thing he said. There was one thing that Keith said that really, really, really stuck out to me. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
You have to realize, are you going to be interested in this in 2 to 3 years? Because once you start a project, if you have customers, you're going to be doing this for the next 2 to 3 years, right? And if you're successful, you might be doing it for the next 10 or 20 years.
And that's the hack. Wow. Keith, Keith, this is so epically true. The idea that you have to enjoy something, no matter what the market, it's not that it has to be your hobby or it has to be like this burning desire of a market that you might be entering, but you have to be involved and in the project enough that, especially because it's true, it's the longer you're going to be in it is the more successful it is, right? Because if it is successful, then you have customers that need attention, customers that need care, customers that need support. And then you might need to find more customers as well to continue it on. And I love this idea because I know that when we're starting out, we often think very, very short term. We just think about, well, if I did this, could I make money at it right now? It's like, well, where does that money come from? That money comes from you selling a product or a service. That money comes from you getting that exchange of value in some way from your customer. But that customer has to be taken care of. And I've discussed this before, the whole like live in days, but like work in months. And then Keith takes it even further, where work in years or even decades, because you have to think this way. Don't get into something that you are super not into or not interested in any way. And it's, again, it doesn't have to be that you're into golfing and you're going to start a golfing business, but the business itself, you can build a business in any market and that can interest you if it's done right. So think about doing it right, or thinking about the way you are doing it, and picture yourself doing this 1 year, 3 year, 5 years, 10 years from now, and see if you're still into it. Because one thing, businesses don't just take off. You don't just get a bit and a month later it's huge. It doesn't work like that. It seems like it because these overnight successes we hear about, but these overnight successes are the culmination of years and years of hard work. It's just the way it works. And so Keith, I do appreciate that. And I know that that was sort of an extension of Patrick McKenzie advising you and talking to you about how you have to think about it. And I love that we got to bring that back into the conversation. All right. That's the end of another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. I'm so happy again that you did decide to join me today and enjoy this conversation with Keith and I. It was a lot of fun. And if you haven't checked out the website, hacktheentrepreneur.com, I would love to see you over there. I'd love to have you on the email list. You can reply to any of those emails. Say hi. Tell me what's up. Tell me if you're listening. It'd be great to hear from you. I would love to chat. And yeah, that's it. We have another one coming up in a couple of days. I hope you are enjoying your summer as much as I am. And please, until then, keep hacking the entrepreneur.